Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.
Welcome to Friends with Money. I'm your host and managing editor of Money Magazine, Julia Newbold. We're very proud to celebrate our 250th issue this month, and we want to thank our staff, contributors, and most importantly, you, our loyal and still growing audience. The initial ideas for the magazine haven't changed since launching in 1999. And for me, it's really about equity, ensuring that financial information and easy to understand advice is available to everyone wanting to make the most of their finances. But what has changed is the complexity of the Australian money landscape and the explosion of sophisticated products and technology that retail investors now have access to and need to try and understand. Recently, I caught up with founder and editorial advisor Paul Clitheroe to get his thoughts on the success of Money Magazine and how much people's knowledge about money has grown since those early days.
People and money are really interesting, and it's been really for many, many thousands of years where, frankly, you know, we haven't really had a lot of excess money. You know, the word retirement only came about really in the early part of the 1900s. Basically, we worked and we died. Probably 3 or 4% of the people who were really rich, many argued, never really worked. But the reality was money was very unevenly spread, and we saw a much better spread as we moved into the last century. And so round about the, as we get into the 1970s, 1980s, people don't believe me, particularly youngsters, when people say, Paul, did you get in trouble with money at university? And I said, well, as a matter of fact, in the mid-1970s, I didn't get in trouble with money. The reason being was there was no such thing as a credit card, or certainly not for someone like me. There was Amex and Diners, but no bank cards, no Visa, just none of this stuff. The banks closed at 3 o'clock on a Friday. And if you didn't get your money out by 3 o'clock on Friday, you didn't even go to the pub. So we've had this. That's only the 1970s, by the way. That's not 1432 or something. Mm-hmm. So basically, choice about money and controlling your own money is relatively new in human history. And so as we got into the 80s, people, you know, were getting the idea of maybe owning a share. Very few people did, by the way. Buying a property, and certainly an investment property, was a big thing. But as we moved into the early 1990s, genuine choice was becoming really interesting, and that's when we launched the Money TV show back at Channel 9. Incidentally, Kerry Packer, who was then the owner of the network, hated the idea. His view was that, and it was a bit blokey back then, and Kerry's view was that if you've got a six-pack of beer in the fridge, what more could you want for? But of course, people were becoming, really interested in choice around money. So the show was about that. It was about if you've got a 25-year mortgage, you actually can't leave your bank. And people were quite shocked by that. You know, it's a 25-year, isn't it a 25-year contract? No. It's a choice. So people started to look at shopping around for mortgage, shopping around for insurance. And that's really what the TV show did in the early 90s. And then we thought, you know, there is the people complained about the fact the show was too short. It's only a half-hour TV show. And the reality is that you take out about 7 minutes of ads, and Channel 9 had people to pay. So basically 21-odd minutes of TV. And so we thought, a magazine, because that can give people really the stories we're doing, except we can be more substantial. And so we launched the magazine in 1999. It's a great fanfare. And here we are thinking about our 250th issue, which is really just fantastic, by the way. It says the magazine has done something really pretty sensible over time. But the view around the magazine is really sensible. So take the shorter TV stories and make them into much longer stories in Money Magazine. Give people more information. And that, of course, is where the magazine sits today. It's providing a more in-depth look. But the one thing the magazine's always retained, I think that's why it's continued to do so well, it's just common sense, you know. And funnily enough, I was reading back over the first issue back in July 1999. And in that issue, I actually had my key tips for money success. And what does make me smile a little bit is I think whether they were written by someone in the, I don't know, the 1400s, the 1600s, the 1800s, and reading back over my tips, which are just common sense, basically you could reprint that today. And in fact, I see it written in articles all over the place, you know, spend less than you earn. If it looks too good to be true, it will be. All the stuff I've been banging on about for 40-odd years. But so basically that was the whole idea behind the magazine, with more information and to be sensible. I've seen many magazines come and go that are promising, you know, buy this and make 100%, or, you know, buy this and huge returns, blah, blah, blah. Because that fits right into the money magazine's philosophy. If it looks too good to be true, it will be. And where I think the magazine has been good, though, is you can earn higher returns. And where I think the magazine has been really honest is about, sure, you can earn higher returns, but we're going to be talking about more risks to earn those higher returns. Things like maybe borrowing money to buy an investment property, which worked very well. I go back over our share tips over the many, 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 many years of Money Magazine, and I see things along the lines of, you know, the float of Woolies for about $2.30, the Commonwealth Bank at $8 or $9. And obviously in the magazine, we were saying, and the TV show, we were saying to people, look, you know, we think these things are a good long-term investment. They're not a get-rich-quick plan. We don't get to make money overnight. But interestingly, it's fun for me to look back over the 250 issues of Money Magazine. And what I see is consistency and no promises of get rich quick, because we can't promise that. We'd be telling you dreadful fibs. But basically, how can you use your money better to make better returns and understanding risk? Because it's your choice. And, I hope it's helped anyone who's reading the magazine. It's certainly one of my favourites is when people come up to me and say, you know, Paul, back in 1999 when the magazine put $20 a week into my mortgage, I thought that was an absolutely, like, $20, how can that make a difference? And the number of times, a couple of times a week, someone will say to me somewhere as I wander around the place, a bit harder in isolation, mind you, but someone will say to me, you know, that $20 a week thing, I really now understand compound interest, because the $20 a week meant I paid my mortgage off 7 years earlier. It freed me up to top up my superannuation and to go on and create more wealth. And that, I think, is a summary of what Money Magazine's trying to do.
Have you had any surprises when you've heard from people that you thought that they wouldn't be interested in something and they were, or you thought something was really important for them to know and they didn't care, anything like that?
Look, the thing that probably surprises me most is that we are humans. And that's why I really enjoy the study of behavioural economics. It's economics is a dry thing, but behavioural means people. And so the thing that actually surprises me now is that how all of us really at the end of the day would prefer a shortcut. And so the question I get most commonly in my day-to-day is, have you got a hot tip? And so to which I say no, because why would I still be working if I did? So no, it shouldn't surprise me. But look, I think it's a bit like everything else in our lives. It's about our body weight and diet and, you know, issues we're facing around obesity in the community. It's the same with money. Look, the truth is, I think we'd love a shortcut. Look, I've got to tell you, I much prefer pizza to broccoli. I mean, seriously, and I would love to find a shortcut with money. So probably a big surprise to me is that people, you know, really at the end of the day, they get that money is a bit like managing your health. You know, you've just got to work away at it. So I am a little surprised at times when people are still, maybe it's a nice thing about people. I think we'd still like a shortcut to find that money success. And sadly, I still don't think it exists.
And Paul, I think one of the reasons for your success is actually just the words that you use. And when you're talking about money, just bringing it down, not dumbing it down, but just using more accessible language. Would you agree to that?
I think the thing that we, one of the very first going to the TV show, we did a story on shares, which in 1993, so this is some 6 years before the magazine, clearly people didn't understand shares at all. Very few people owned a share. And so TV has an advantage, as does a magazine. You can use pictures. And so we brought a pizza out, and I was simply explaining that a share was here is the company. The company is the pizza, and you can own a piece of the pizza. You can own a slice of the pizza. You could own a share. So, yeah, look, simple language, which certainly helps. And, again, it is a regular comment I get is people say, And I always love this one with my uni mates having a beer at the pub, which hopefully we can do sometime in the near future. But basically, someone will come up and say, gee, you know, Paul, you make stuff sound really simple. And my mates have got used to this, and my mates will call out, yeah, that's because he's not very clever, which is maybe true as well. But look, the thing that I realised in my study at uni and so on is that particularly what we're really doing is, in a way, we are really talking about economics. And what I really have realised is a lot of it, the language is, look, it's pretty hard going. You know, gross domestic product, you know, standard deviation on investment, you know, are you getting alpha returns, beta returns? That's not language that anyone who's not trained in the area can understand. And the thing I always find is a lot of people talk about money in a much sort of a more global context. Prime Minister John Howard, I've been chairing financial literacy for the federal government for a decade and a half now. And John Howard said to me when he asked me involved in that was, he said, you know, Paul, if people save, it's great for GNP. It's great for the economy. And that's true. The Prime Minister was completely correct. But I think it's the wrong way around. I think a far more powerful way to get to the same point of people saving is you don't talk about it being great for the economy, for heaven's sake. You talk about it being great for us, the individual. You know, if we save a little bit of money, we will get more choice about how we lead our life. You'll get to choose the house you live in time to come, where your kids go to school, and you'll get to choose if you may want to retire or not. So for me, it's just taking it down to the real level. That's all. Taking it back to real people. That's us.
What difference have you found in what people are interested in now as opposed to 20 years ago?
The big difference in the time the magazine has been running is I really thought that knowledge amongst people about money was increasing pretty steadily. And it's obviously with things like Money Magazine, there's all sorts of sources of actually good information on money, which has been brilliant. So what I got right is I got right the fact that people's knowledge would be so much better. People do know a lot more about money. What I didn't really get is how complicated money has become. I really, you know, even back in when Money Magazine launched in 1999, compulsory superannuation, so on, are all very new. And I didn't really realise how you could spend most of your life simply studying superannuation to understand that. I didn't realise how complicated even markets would get with thousands of unlisted trusts, with with ETFs, with warrants of options, and that our tax system is just so darn complicated. So the thing I kind of always thought, like most Australians, that I'd learn enough about money that here we are some many, many years down the track with Money Magazine, some 20-odd years down the track, 20, oh, crikey, getting up to 22 years. And what I thought is that we'd be able to show people how to be their own coach, their own money coach. What surprises me in my day-to-day is that I'm thinking about my tax at the moment, and I ring my tax advisor. With this Commonwealth Bank buyback, for example, which many magazine followers will have bought money, will have bought Commonwealth Bank shares either under their own steam or listen to people like us. And so with this buyback, and I understand how the buyback works, I can read the Commonwealth Bank material on the share buyback, but how exactly that the frank dividend that comes with it applies to me. And then, of course, I've got to find out the rate of tax in my superannuation fund. And the only way I can do that is to go to my superannuation advisor. So I think what we all got right is a thirst for knowledge, which is still there. Thirst for knowledge is absolutely there. But not in a million years would I pick the complexity of our modern financial system. Things like Afterpay and so on. I mean, the world is at a level of financial sophistication that I find extraordinary. And that's why I think at the magazine we're saying to people, you know what? You probably don't know how to repair your modern car either. Because unlike an old car, and when we launched Money Magazine, you could lift the bonnet of your car and you can see valves and an engine and all sorts of things that made sense. Now, when we open the bonnet of our car, all you can see is basically a mass of electronics. And so I'm encouraging people with money the same as them with cars. Look, it doesn't matter if we don't understand all the detail in the engine. It really doesn't. We need to know how to be safe with money. We need to understand the road rules of money. We need to understand risk and return. But if we think, any of us think, we're going to understand the complexities of superannuation, the tax system, options, warrants, global share trading, Julia, it's just not going to happen. So basically, I think the real key thing is not to get humans tend to get overwhelmed if there's too much information. We really do. We get absolutely overwhelmed by it. And what I'm saying is, I don't think we need to be overwhelmed by information. I think we need to keep hammering away at the basics. Are we spending less than we're earning? Are we generating surplus income? How are we investing the surplus income? Do all the basic stuff ourselves. But when it comes to more sophisticated stuff like a self-managed superannuation fund, look, I didn't think this would happen, but you've got to do what I do. And I think you've got to go and talk to someone who specializes in that area.
Well, thank you for that.
Okay, Julia. See you later.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Money Magazine founder and editorial advisor, Paul Clitheroe. Please remember that you can subscribe to Money Online and get friends with money wherever you listen to your favourite podcasts.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au.